Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Grey's Academy. And guess what? It's the daytime again. I am one of your hosts, Kelsey.
And I am one of your hosts, Carmen, but for me, it's nighttime. I'm recording
Earlier in the day where he lives.
It is earlier, but...
Time travel.
We are your favorite podcast hosts, and it is a beautiful day to podcast and talk about this... freaking episode. My gosh, it's a good one. Not to spoil anything, but it's good.
So we're anticipating lots of conversation again. The last couple of episodes we've done, we've ended up breaking into two parts, so we're just going to anticipate that ahead of time this time and structure it so that the episode is broken up easier for you guys. So we're going to plan on 2 1-hour-ish episodes. So our first episode is going to cover,
let it be a surprise. Don't even tell them
surprise things that surprise. Didn't even happen in this episode. We're just going to talk about cheese.
Oh, fuck.
I do love cheese.
Okay. Scale of 1 to 10, Brie.
I mean, it's good.
I'm never
going to pick. My first choice is always going to be goat cheese. Always. Oh, that's anything.
See, my first choice will never be a goat cheese.
That's insane. You're eating the wrong cheese.
I'm talking Havarti, Gouda, Brie,
sharp. No,
Swiss.
I love goat cheese. I love sharp cheddar. I love a sharp Parmesan. All right.
Yeah.
So I'm starving.
Yeah, I know. I haven't even eaten lunch yet today.
Same.
I think White Castle. I'm going to do White Castle for lunch after this.
Interesting choice.
Mm.
I'm going to watch the whole next episode on your potty.
No. No, you silly goose.
Oh, you silly goose. Okay, so... Oh my God. Okay, wait. We have a Discord now.
Yes! Oh, man!
Before we start. So I, hooked everything up to Patreon last night. It's going to be for our Patreon members. So if you are a member on Patreon and you have not gotten an invite to Discord, please tell me because I... fully do not understand what I'm doing. Michael is on Discord a lot for other things, so he is he has more knowledge, so he's trying to help me figure it all out. But please be patient with me because I'm trying to figure it out. But I did set it up and I fully linked it to the Patreon, and I think some people got invites because some people joined it. So I know some people did, but if you are on Patreon at all, it's going to be for all of our Patreon members, regardless of tier. Please let me know if you did not get an invite to that so that we can make sure to sort that out. And if you are interested in being on our Discord, please consider joining our Patreon.
Yes.
And
speaking of Patreon,
we're going to have multiple threads. So there will be one thread that's basically where we are on the podcast, and Carmen is on that thread.
So don't fuck it up.
A no spoilies thread. And then we will have a private, I already made a private thread that Carmen is not going to be allowed to be on, that we can talk about whatever. And then any other threads that people are interested in making or having whatever, we're very open to ideas and what people want to use that for. Again, I don't really know Discord, so I'm learning as I go. But if you guys have any other ideas you would want it to be used for, please let us know, because we definitely want to make sure people are enjoying it and getting good use out of it.
Yeah. I was going to say, speaking of Patreon, we have a new Patreon patron who I met via Instagram. Shout out to our friend Josie. Really appreciate you being a Patreon subscriber, but also I reached out and I was messaging her a little bit. She also thinks we're very funny. So anyone who thinks that we're funny, obviously I love you. You're great. So she was saying that she actually gets looks from her coworkers because she'll be laughing at work sometime listening to our podcast.
Yeah, I love it when we make people actually laugh out loud.
Yes.
Because I feel I feel so much joy when I listen to podcasts and I actually laugh out loud. I'm so funny.
Yeah. But she said her favorite part of the show is that when my predictions are correct, and she side-eyes Kelsey in her brain, because obviously she can't tell me that I'm right.
Right.
So, and she also is on board with our Brooklyn Nine-Nine references. So
yes.
She's a big fan. Remember that scene in Brooklyn Nine-Nine when Captain Holt yells, like, he just goes, "Bone!" When no. Jake Peralta says, oh, okay, I'll have to figure out which episode it is. But, like, there's one episode where Jake Peralta says that and Captain Holt, like, yells back, "Bone!" Like, he just says, "Bone!" And in his voice, so anyways, she said that I remind her of Captain Holt, which everyone should think of me as Captain Holt. I'm incredible.
I love when Amy is late and they're all taking bets on why. And then he's
yes!
like, "Hot damn!" Which I think I read an article that was not, either that wasn't scripted or that wasn't how he was originally going to deliver it. So everyone like being shocked is actually like what happened.
Everything that he does is gold. Same thing with Andy Samberg.
That's a good cast. It's a good cast.
It's an all-star cast.
Okay. Grey's Anatomy.
Are there any other shout-outs? Do you want to just tell people our... I don't think there's any more shout outs, but tell people our socials
too. Oh, okay.
Not our social security numbers, like our social.
I do have yours memorized.
Yeah.
Do you know Jessica's social security number?
Absolutely, I do. Yes.
I do not know Michael's, and I am on his insurance, and I should know it by now because I have to write it down all the time. And I am always in doctor's offices calling him and being like, "Tell me your social," because he won't text it to me. So I'm like, "Tell me your social security number." I should have it memorized by now, and I just do not. I also do not have my children's memorized.
I don't have Marlo's memorized, but I have Jess's memorized. I just don't need Marlo's memorized right now.
Yeah. If you're not the person filling out all the forms, then probably not.
Yeah. I need Jessica's for all the loans that I'm taking out in her name so I can run away to Mexico.
Right. I forgot about that plan.
Yeah.
As long as you take the podcasting equipment.
Absolutely.
Okay. So you can follow us on Instagram at Grey's Academy Pod. You can follow us on Twitter for now, because if that motherfucker starts charging, I'm not going to pay him any money to be on that app. So, we are on the Twitters. I don't post as much on Twitter, but I use it to, like, I don't tweet on our page as much. I tweet like when we have new episodes, but I mostly am like conversing with people that I find other like places having Grey's Anatomy conversations, because Carmen's not attached to that profile, so I will have spoily related conversations with people. And then you can find us individually on Instagram, carmen.gabriel.official, chaoticallykelsey. And you can email me at graysacademypod@gmail.com. And you can find our Patreon on the link tree on our Instagram bio or the episode description.
Yes. Also, you love getting those emails, don't you? Like, there's always just so much good.
I love when I get emails from people, even if it's literally just being like, "This is what I do when I listen to the podcast and it makes me giggle. I loved it when Carmen got this wildly wrong and it was so crazy that he got this thing correct."
Yes. Carmen's a champion. Medium. You could just email Kelsey letting her know how great I am. Maybe I'll just start making fake email accounts and I'll just send them to you.
I know you won't do that. You're not committed enough to time.
I'm going to do it now.
Goodness. I forget what I was going to say. Oh, you did get some predictions very wrong in this episode, and it warmed my heart.
I think I got every single prediction right in this episode.
And very incorrect.
Well, you'll have to tell me which ones I got wrong, because in my mind, I'm right.
Well, shocking.
That's fair. Yeah. Everything I do, I think I'm right.
Okay. This is episode 96 overall. We are so close to 100. It is the 18th episode of the 5th season. It is called Stand By Me. And that is a song.
Yes. Stand By Me is a song originally by Ben E. King and released in 1961, April 24th, 1961.
It's the song you're thinking. Like, if when yes. I say Stand By Me, it's the song that you're thinking.
Yeah.
When Stand the night.
It's great. Great song. Obviously, one of the most covered songs over just generations.
Yeah.
Most notably, in my mind, in my humble opinion, is the John Lennon version. But there's just so many versions that are out there. So, but my personal favorite is the John Lennon version, which I'll get to in a second. But Stand By Me, originally in 1961, had reached number one in the U.S. Hot R&B Billboard charts, number one in the Billboard Hot 100, number four in the Billboard Hot 100, number three in the Cashbox Top 100, and then it reached number 27 in the UK and 16 in Canada, which is pretty impressive. I'm always just impressed by non-Beatles hits in the 60s. And granted, I don't think the Beatles were there yet. I think it was 63 or 64, a little bit later. But anyways, this also had a little bit of a resurgence when the movie Stand By Me came out in the 80s. Mm-hmm. It hit number nine on the Billboard Hot 100, number one in the UK. Number 10 on the adult contemporary charts, 3 in Switzerland, 8 in Sweden, 9 in Norway, 7 in the Netherlands, 1 in Ireland, 1 in Canada, 82 in Australia, 17 in Italy, 20 in France. Like, it just was, the movie must have been great because...
What is that movie about? Because I am definitely thinking of the wrong one, and I know that I know that movie, but I am
There's
thinking
a movie called
Girl.
Stand By Me.
Yeah, I know, but what was it about?
I've never seen it.
Wasn't it about children being friends?
Hold on, let's look this up. Stand By Me. The plot of Stand By Me, the movie. Plot of Stand By Me, the movie. There we go. Plot.
Because I'm definitely just thinking of My Girl in my head, and that's wrong. But that's also
There's a writer, Gordy LaChance, reads a newspaper article about a fatal stabbing. Something brings back in him when he was 12 years old and his best friend... We're searching for the body of a missing boy named Ray Brower near Castle Rock, Oregon. And his parents ignored him as a child. This is a very in-depth. This is like a 12 paragraph. I'm just trying to find, gosh.
What is this movie about? Who is
where's
in
the
it?
Hold on. I'm looking up the IMDb now.
Oh, my God. Everyone there, is
there
screaming.
Are people.
We're going to get actually so many messages being like, I cannot believe you haven't seen this movie. Well, believe it. I haven't fucking seen Titanic. Okay, guys, everyone leave me alone.
I haven't seen the second half of Titanic, and that story is a tragic one for Patreon. We'll talk about that sometime.
Okay, it's Will Wheaton and River Phoenix. Oh, and yep. Corey Feldman. Okay, yeah, this is like, and Kiefer. This is
Kiefer Sutherland.
This is very like 80s cast. Yeah, this is the one where they like see a dead body, I think.
Yeah, something like that. After the death of one of his friends, a writer recounts his childhood journey with his boys trying to with his friends trying to find the body of a missing boy.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So, you go, Gordy.
Good job, 80s.
Not to be mistaken.
Yeah, this is the one.
With
yeah,
the
because
movie
they're
Pig
like
Gordy.
They're on the railroad tracks. Yeah, I definitely like know of this film.
Yeah, and also the railroad track scene you're thinking of is not Homeward Bound with the Golden Labrador Retriever. This is a different movie.
Yeah.
It's also not Red October.
I did not know this was based on a Stephen King novel.
Isn't that a horror movie? Isn't he a horror writer?
He typically is, yeah. But I do think, you know, if you found a body as a child, that could be mildly horrific.
It is. Not mildly. That's just horrific.
Yeah.
So, anyways, yeah, so that obviously helped get a resurgence of the song. And then specifically the John Lennon version I wanted to just talk about here, it reached number 20 on the Billboard Hot 100, 22 in Germany, 13 in Canada, and then 30 in the UK. So that was written for, that was actually the last single he wrote before a quick, like, 5-year retirement from music. So he did a cover, which was very well received. So I do not have the Ben E. King version, but I do have the John Lennon version in my iTunes library, which gives this a 5 out of 5. Love the song. And it's one of those ones where you can't help but sing along and jam to.
Stand By Me.
Yeah. So anyways, with that... This podcast is now just Kelsey bebobbing to the song. And after this, we're going to go on a journey to find a dead body.
Mm. Are you going to come here or am I going to come there?
We'll meet halfway and see what happens.
I was gonna make a crass joke, but I will not make it.
Listen, I was trying to get out there, but you know.
I know.
Alas.
Okay. So this episode was written by Zoanne Clack, we have seen many times before, directed by Jessica Yu, we have also seen, aired March 19th, 2009, 14.67 million views, and the Netflix synopsis is, after his fellow surgeons try and fail to bring Derek back to work, Meredith must summon the strength to convince him. And that's a garbage synopsis.
Terrible synopsis. It doesn't
0 out of 5 Netflix.
Yeah, that just misses so many other
also like she
plots.
Doesn't have to summon the strength. Like she has a like she just he calls her and she goes. Like that's not and that it's poorly it's bad. That's a bad synopsis.
My real question is Meredith a doctor or a god?
Doctor.
Or god.
Okay.
She manifests all of her strength. Summons.
Use, listeners.
Yeah. Goodness
Busted
gracious.
Some eardrums. Okay.
All right, folks. Well, we're 16 minutes in. Let's get into it.
Okay, so we're going to start with Christina and Izzy. Let's just dive right into this shit.
So, obviously, we open up the show with them in the kitchen, right? Yeah. And they're reading these books. So they're being super sketchy. Alex walks in. Also, Alex does this thing that I kind of hate that a lot of men do, where he says something super condescending in a nice way and thinks it's a compliment. When he's like, oh, I already flew solo. You're on training wheels. Kiss. And then walks away. And I'm like, dude, just you don't even know right now, Alex. You don't even know.
Yeah. Also, a trope that I hate is like when people are like obviously hiding something and the other person's just like, OK.
Yeah. Keep hiding like, it. You keep your secrets.
No one would literally ever do that. Like,
no,
no one would
I would literally start ripping
I would be
through
like,
that
I
shit.
I will just take that away from you and look at it.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Goodness.
That's, yeah.
Yeah. So that's how we get the start of it. And this.
Christina is very invested in helping, which is not what you thought was going to be happening.
Not what I thought. No. What did I say? Did I actually give a prediction?
Yeah. This is what you're most wrong about because you said that she was going to not tell anybody and she was going to talk to Hunt and basically be like, what would you do if you had a patient that did this? But she wasn't going to tell anybody.
And then she fucking did.
Yeah, I was like, that's wrong.
Sorry, guys. There's a chance I was maybe wrong.
Also, she interacted with Hunt like zero in this episode, so. Okay, so yeah, there Christina has already put in it's been 3 days ish, vaguely. That's what I'm
that's what I was
based
gonna ask.
On context clues. It's been about 3 days.
Got it. Since the baseball
since the
hitting
last
the ring.
Episode. Yeah.
Standing on the vent, everything.
So Christina has pulled a lot of research for Izzy. She's been trying to get her an appointment with a really good oncologist in the hospital. She is like talking to Izzy, like pushing her to, you know, look into this, take these appointments, like call in sick because she's sick. And Izzy is just being super weird. And Christina is obviously confused and frustrated by like what Izzy was doing when she told her. Which is a conversation that they have later on in the episode. But Izzy is just kind of like brushing it all off and being like, blah, whatever. I can still go to work. I can like handle all this stuff. And Christina is, they're both. Well, Izzy's trying not to be affected in like a distracted way, but she's affected in an emotional way. And Christina is affected in a distracted way.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so, it's clearly bleeding over into her solo surgery patient, which she gets, and we'll get Mrs. to that Kim. In a minute. Yeah. The thing that really frustrated me about this whole interaction, and it's a bit tropey of, oh, you got this terrible news, you're going to like brush it off or not take it seriously. We get to the point where it throughout the episode, I was like, okay, but what's your goal, Izzy? Like, what are you doing? Why even tell anyone at that point? Like, is it just to make yourself feel better? Like, you can't carry this secret. I don't know. There's like a lot that happens with this particular storyline that I'm kind of left wondering why.
Yeah.
And clearly so is Christina.
Yeah, it's obviously a choice to tell Christina. We talked about that some last week with, you know, they don't have the bond, obviously, that Izzy has with anyone else. But it's not like, yes, she says you don't like me, but that does not mean she doesn't care about her. You know what I mean? Like, clearly she does care about her. Also, we know that Christina is, you know, more type A and more like problem solving, go by the book, these are the solutions, blah, blah, all this stuff. And so it's not super surprising that this is how, to me, it's not super surprising that this is how she reacts. Because she's like, okay, here's a problem. I will gonna solve the problem.
Yeah.
Cause that's what science is.
Yeah. Well then, so the distractedness that you mentioned, so obviously it bleeds over. We find out that Christina gets to fly solo. Bailey's like, hey, you're up. You're going to the big leagues. Like, this is fucking happening. Mm-hmm. But the entire time that sweet old lady is like trying to ask Christina questions, she's on her phone, she's trying to get her, what's the name of the oncologist she's trying to get her into?
Dr. Swinder.
And what's the patient's name? Kim?
Well, in Grey's Anatomy, she's Lane Kim's mom, so she's Mrs. Kim, but in this, she's Mrs. Sully.
Who's Lane Kim?
Rory Gilmore's best friend.
No. Oh, okay.
My God. Guys.
Oh, boy.
Podcast over.
Okay. The revival was better than the original anyways.
I will kill you. It is fall. You will not speak those heinous lies during the la-la time of year.
Oh, goodness. My car's name is Lorelei, but not after Gilmore Girls.
I know. What will you name your next car?
Lorelei.
That's wildly uncreative.
I'll Samantha. Samantha Kelsey. also, that was, I think I just spoiled like a potentially fun Patreon reveal because your Discord name is S. Kelsey, and I was like, that's funny. I like that.
Have we not talked about that on this podcast?
I don't know. We've been doing this for so long that I genuinely don't even know what people know about
us. We are coming up on 2 years.
That's crazy.
Yes, my first name is Samantha.
Second name is also Samantha.
No, my middle name is Kelsey.
Samantha, Samantha Kelsey.
We did talk about this because I feel like you made that joke, but maybe that was that other podcast that we used to do.
Yeah. Which one?
So, I don't know, hard to say.
Anyways, okay. So, Christina's like clearly brushing this lady off. Mm-hmm. What the fuck is her name?
Miss Sully.
Sully, gosh, I didn't even like, I clearly am not doing a good job remembering these patients' names. She's just hernia lady. And that's in fair. My notes. Yeah. I feel a little bit bad for her. You know, Christina's like
super bad for her. I was trying to think like of experiences I've had with doctors. And I don't feel I've luckily never felt that. Well, that's not true. One time when I was here in Chattanooga, I think it was after college, but before I had moved to Florida, and I was trying to find a therapist, and I went and had a meeting with this one therapist, and I was like, got there early. They like let me go in the office to wait, and there was just like boxes everywhere, like files. And she came in and she was like, I thought it was like gonna be a talk therapy session. and she was like, didn't sit down the whole time. She's like running around looking at all her shit. And she just like, then was like, oh, okay, well, I'll just give you a prescription. And it was like 10 minutes of FaceTime. And then she just like left. And I was like, what is happening? It was unpleasant. I was like, that's why finding a therapist is exhausting, because you have to find one that like vibes with you. And that is not my vibe.
Yeah.
So yeah. But for the most part, I've had not that experience with doctors, but I would imagine, especially, if it was like surgical, that would be super frustrating.
Yeah. And it's, I get why Christina's distracted. I think that if she would have just said, hey, there is another patient that I'm working with, or if she said anything, this sweet old lady seems to be understanding, but yeah, she's missing
she's
this
very
trip.
Patient.
Yeah. She's a patient. And she's missing this trip with her friends, and they're in Europe somewhere. They're on.
Yeah.
You know, and she's like, I just have these questions that my friends wrote down.
Mm-hmm.
And when she finally does get him to Christina's like, this, what the fuck is this, a fucking joke? Like, what the fuck is this? Bye. Yeah. I have a phone call to make on my razor. My fucking flip phone. But anyways, Christina and Izzy.
Yes. So, yeah, after, so Izzy gets put on Mark's case, which we'll talk about later in the episode. And Christina immediately is like, you shouldn't be on this case. And Izzy's like, I'm fine. And Christina would then, when Bailey is putting out other assignments, Christina gets told she gets her first solo surgery. It's a hernia patient. That's Miss Sully. So Christina is still trying to get Izzy an appointment. She's calling in favors from people she used to know, all this stuff. And that's why she's so distracted, and because that's where her head is at. Which, like, we know Christina is not, like, the warmest when it comes to bedside manner, but she is focused. She's not normally, like, this distracted, like, all over the place kind of person. Because that's just not, like, her personality. Because she is very much, like, 100%, you know, committed when she is in something. But that's why she's distracted work-wise, because she's really committing more to, like, solving the Izzy problem.
Right.
Sorry, I had a burp.
You're good.
And so then, yeah, Miss Patient. Oh my God. Miss Sully is being very patient with her. She's like, I'm trying to find these questions that I have. And Christina's like, I'll get to your questions when I come back to do the exam, blah, blah, all this stuff. So then she gets the questions. Then Christina gets another phone call and like shoves the questions in her pocket, blah, blah, all this stuff. So then Christina, again, while doing all this, is also trying to find Izzy and being like, this is, we get the scene at the lunch table, the enema.
Oh, great, great scene.
First
fucking
of all, it's been
George?
Ages since we've had all five of them at a lunch table together. Ages.
Yes.
So that was great to see.
We just need to take a second and acknowledge George has been on this from day one.
Literally.
He even calls out at the table. He's like, hey, Izzy, you want to tell us what an enema really fucking is, you dumb bitch? Yeah. And then no one else says anything. Alex doesn't say anything. Meredith doesn't say anything. No one says anything.
Yeah.
They just let it go.
It's really bizarre. So this is like the breakdown of the whole George thing is like, I don't know, like if T.R. Knight was like filming something else or what he was doing, because he just like didn't really have anything going on for several episodes. And then they're like bringing him back and they're like, you know, the retconning was like, oh, I've, you know, I'm backing off because you're with Alex, blah, blah, all this stuff. And so now he's like, it's like, hey, remember how George is like actually a really good friend for Izzy, which I've never questioned, like as a friend, they do have like a bond that made a lot of sense to me. And so,
especially the sex.
No. And so when he like, you know, ages ago when she's having sex with Denny the ghost is like, you know, something's wrong with Izzy and Meredith's like something's wrong with all of us. Okay. Not the point. Selfish much. But
yeah.
And then,
way to make
know,
this about you. It's,
he sees
gosh.
Izzy like having her emotional fallout with the Sloan situation in this episode. He's like on it, but he's not being that pro, like he is trying to do something, but he's not like pushing anything. It's just really weird.
It's you can call it out with a lack of assertiveness, and that's what he's doing. He's like, hey, I want you all to know that I know something's off, but like, I'm not going to do anything about it. It's fine.
Well, like, because he feels the whole like, oh, I've backed off because of Alex thing. Like, it makes sense as to why he's not pushing stuff, especially like, I think if you also look at it from the mindset of like how damaging it was to their relationship when Izzy was like, oh, I hate Callie. She's a dumb piece of shit. And you made a terrible mistake by marrying her. While Meredith was dying.
Remember that? Yeah, that fucking monologue. I forgot about the monologue. Izzy, why do I care about you? You just made... Oh, I forgot about that. Gosh, you're Katherine Heigl, you're lucky you're just so beautiful. Like, you're a dynamic character. And you're dying now, so...
So, yeah. So then... What was I saying? Oh, because of that, he doesn't... Like, you know, potentially, maybe he's seeing this as, like, is something going on with her because her relationship with Alex is bad? Like, I don't want to be in that same position where I'm like, hey, you shouldn't be in a relationship with this person because like of what happened last time. So it's just like super weird. And I think maybe you can kind of take that as the assumption of like why he's not like getting anywhere with this conversation of like knowing something's wrong. I don't know. Anyways, so basically he is on. Yeah. So they're at the lunch table. Christina sits down and she's like, can you go to your fucking appointment? And Izzy's like, can I eat? And Christina's like, no, literally go to your appointment. And Izzy does not.
Like a spoilers. Dummy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so annoying. That actually, like, I'm kind of can see where she's coming from for some of the episode and like not really wanting to talk about it at length. But I don't understand the blowing off of the appointment. That one really pissed me off. Especially seeing us, the watchers, the audience, the watcher, what the fuck? The audience seeing how hard Christina freaking is working to get this appointment.
We're all just voyeurs watching people live this life through yeah. a box.
So.
That also annoyed me too. That's yes. like if I put a recommendation in for you for like a job interview and then you're like.
And I get the interview.
Yeah. And then
and
you
I'm
just
like, yeah,
either
you
no
can
show
schedule me an interview and then I just don't go.
Yeah.
Dumb.
Yeah. Cause it wasn't even like, there wasn't a follow up of like, hey, thank you so much for allowing me in Dr. Swinder. But like, I can't
just
make
doesn't
it.
Doesn't go.
No call.
It's
no show.
It's in the freaking hospital.
Yeah.
You're literally dumb. Here. Just yeah. walk your ass up two stories, ride the yeah. freaking elevator. I don't know. Anyways. Okay. So they're at the lunch table and they're talking and then Alex, Meredith and George come and sit down and that's when they switch to an enema for some
enemas.
Izzy's like, it's the enema. And you can see her face be like, why did I say that?
Yeah. Cause like there's no dignifying thing to talk about with a fucking yeah. enema.
And Christina's like, yeah, Izzy's enema. She said she's been super backed up for weeks.
They have to have some golden outtakes for that episode.
It's so weird. And they're just like talking. And Alex is like, well, if you're constipated, like, should you really be eating these French fries? Like, what?
Again, and condescending.
Meredith's concern is like, wait, Christina, why would you make her an appointment for an enema? Like, that's what Meredith is like. Why would you spend your time making an appointment for Izzy? Which is fair, because like she wouldn't do that. That's weird.
Right.
And then that's when George is like, Izzy, what is enema code for? And Izzy's like, oh, my enema, my business, and just leaves. Okay.
And no one questions it. Everyone's because the like, whole the whole episode, Meredith is like, I need to ignore everything that could be happening in this hospital if it doesn't reflect professional business. And
or is about me and my relationship.
Right. I will say there was like kind of this comedic moment where obviously Christina confronts Izzy and she's like, well, what are they going to call me? Swiss cheese for brains? And Christina has the line of the episode, which I had to look up this word, by the way. Okay. She's like, no, that's awkward and long. Blowhole is
blowhole's
pithy.
Pithy.
Yeah. Which for anyone who doesn't know what the word pithy means, it means concise.
It's like quick wit. Like, oh, it's yeah. quick and funny. Haha. Pithy. Yeah. Snappy. Yeah.
So I had to look that up, but I was like, pithy. And I had to watch that episode that I put turn the titles on, the subtitles. And I was like, what did she say?
Yeah.
But yeah, it just, so she gets to that point where she's like, I don't even know if I want to do this. Like, I don't think I want to do this at all. And Christina has the great question of like, then why even fucking tell me?
Yeah, that's a really good scene. It's a great scene.
What was your thought going through that moment? Because obviously, anything that's Christina, obviously, you're a big fan of. Like,
yeah.
If you're trying to put yourself into the mindset of Christina in that moment, what's going through your head as the watcher and as a fan of Christina?
So, for me, this episode is super relatable because you do see, like, a more vulnerable, like, personal relationship side with Christina. Like, yes, she is being type A, type very problem-solving about this, but because she cares about Izzy. And we see that in this scene first, because she's like, why would you tell me? Like, you're not dumping this on me and dying in my arms. And that's right. When Izzy's like, I don't even know if I want to fight. And then Christina's like, you know, why? I don't understand what the point was. And then Izzy just says, pretend I didn't tell you or whatever, and leaves. And like the way Christina reacts when she leaves, to me, I think is very telling. Like, yes, it's a silent moment, but she's like got her hands on her mouth and she just sits down. Like, she at that point, she's like at a loss because Izzy has confided in her the secret. And I think she was okay keeping the secret when she thought that Izzy was going to get treatment. But the realization right. that she now knows that Izzy is actively choosing to do nothing and dying and no one else knows. And like the problem solving there is out the window. She has done everything in her power and it's not working. She doesn't want Izzy to die. She cares about Izzy. Yes, she might not like her. They're not besties. They don't have that connection that Izzy and George have or Meredith and Christina have. But she cares about her. She's, I don't know if you would say friends, but she cares about her. They are like connected because, you know, they've been through their program together. They have a connection. And so that realization, and then also when her patient then before the surgery is like, I might be like a batty old lady to you. And this might be a silly procedure, but like, this matters to me. And like, I'm afraid and I want you to reassure me because you're my doctor. And then that also, I think, is a very grounding moment for Christina to be like, okay, I am in a headspace where I don't know what to do because my problem solving isn't working. And then this woman is being like, because Christina knows she's a good doctor. So basically This woman is like, you aren't making me feel like you're going to do a good job as my doctor.
Yeah. And so that we get, hold on. We get her response to that. But first we have a quick message from our regional sponsors. All right, and we are back. So, Kelsey, what does she say at that point to sweet old Miss Sully?
She says, like, this is not just any procedure to me. This matters to me just as much as you. Like, it's going to be okay. And then, so they put her under, and Christina realizes for it to be okay, she has to be in it.
Yeah.
And to be able to give 100%, she cannot have this like life altering secret anymore. So she has a pause and Alex and Bailey are like, what the fuck is happening? And so then before she starts, she looks up and she's like, Izzy has stage 4 skin cancer and it is in her brain. She is resisting treatment and she needs help. And it's just like, whew, the weight is lifted. I can do my job now.
Which, gosh, the writers who was the writer for this episode again?
Zoanne Clack.
When you think of not only how these writers are making this episode kind of the arc that we're seeing within this episode, but like Sandra Oh, the way that she acted Christina in this episode, it's just on a different level because you see that she's clearly internalizing this and she does care about Izzy, even if it is purely from a medical standpoint. She has never cared about any of her patients that I can remember to this point, the way that she's caring about Izzy and her treatment.
Right.
And even then, this is her first solo surgery on a make or break her entire career kind of like pivotal moment.
Yeah.
And you see that there's a flip that a switch that she could just flip. She says, fuck, I'm about to ruin this. Hey guys, I need to get this off my chest. And once I do it, I'm washing my hands of it. And it's your problem now, Alex and Bailey. Now I'm going to do my solo surgery to continue my career. And it's not a bad thing. It's not like a robotic thing. It's just
And it's not I don't think it's selfish either. Because at this point, yes, it is so that she can be in her job, but also like she doesn't know what to do about Izzy anymore. And she's like,
carrying all that weight by herself too. And yeah. So is Izzy. They need their group together.
Yeah. And that's Izzy comes to that through her own storyline with Mark's patient. But like
she also didn't get a choice because Christina made that choice for her.
But she isn't mad about it. She doesn't fight it.
Right.
Like she's like, thank you. But so yeah, Christina I don't think that it was a choice made lightly. Because she is looking at it more like it's worth Izzy being mad if she doesn't die.
Or go through it alone.
Right.
And also so Miss Sully doesn't die if she botches the surgery.
Also,
she needs to tour Russia.
Thinking of the real life ramifications of that is that are they all just standing in silence while she does this surgery now?
Right. Or does like, Alex walk out? Does Bailey say, Alex, you should go. Like, you're good. That's your girlfriend.
Yeah. But to like wrap up on this storyline afterwards, she goes and finds Izzy and she's like, I told Alex and Bailey and they're telling Meredith and George. And for what it's worth, I do think you should fight this. And Izzy's like,
so good. Goosebumps.
Thank you. Izzy says like, it's, and cause I think Christina's fully prepared for her to be like, never talk to me again. And Izzy's like, thank you. And I think also you kind of see a weight lift off of Izzy as well, I kind of took it as though like, it's easy for her to tell Christina because they don't have that emotional connection. So the fact that then Christina has taken the weight off of Izzy of having to tell these people that are going to have this big emotional reaction. I think that is kind of something that Izzy was avoiding doing because she doesn't want to have like all of these like conversations of like, oh my God, like all the big reactions. So I think that she kind of realizes she's like, wait, so now everyone knows and I'm not the one that had to tell them.
Yeah.
And then also realizing that she's now going to have like support throughout this. And then it ends with them all like getting Izzy in a hospital gown and putting her in a bed. And like, she's a patient now. She's on the other side of it.
Yeah. There's a couple of things that I wanted to specifically call out. I like that there is this that you get a full circle arc for kind of their relationship in just two episodes. You see Izzy tell Christina I know that we don't have that kind of relationship, but here's what's up. I need to tell someone. And it ends with Christina kind of coming back and saying like, Izzy, like we do have that kind of relationship. It just looks different.
In that scene after Izzy says thank you and they just sit there and then Christina takes her hand and like holds her hand.
Yeah.
That I think is also a big deal because of who Christina is. And that's not right. Like at all the kind of person she is. So it's like a moment of reassurance for both herself and Izzy.
Yeah. Because even like with all of the Derek and Meredith stuff, you never really see Christina use physical touch as a coping mechanism. Mm-hmm. And granted, Meredith and Izzy are two very different people. And maybe that's just Christina knowing, being smart in that moment of saying it's worth more to Izzy for me to hold her hand than it means to me to not. The only other thing I wanted to call out on this particular storyline that I actually didn't like was that Bailey was the one who tells George.
Why?
I have a hard time understanding where they want us to believe their relationship is at, George and Izzy. Like, I would have liked to have seen Izzy be the one who breaks that to George. I'm glad still, like, I'm not heartbroken because Bailey and George have an amazing relationship as we've seen, but I just feel like if you're going to have George kind of like say all of these things and he's like, he's noticing, I wish that it would have just been Izzy gets like, he gets that, not vindication, but a little bit of a vindication of like, George, thank you for noticing me. This is what's up. Not that like I'm not upset. I just wish it would have looked a little bit different, but I still like that Bailey, there was someone that is close to George who told him, but yeah, it was tough to see her in patient's clothes at the end, and she's getting a CT scan or some sort of Were they about to put her? Were they just? Oh, was no, she just on the bed? Or
she's just in the room.
For some reason, I'm remembering the end of that scene because I only watched it once, and it was at 2 o'clock in the morning last night, where they're about to put her in like for a scan or something. So it was just the bed.
She's just getting in the bed.
Yeah. But yeah, great episode for them. It's crazy, but I can't imagine being in that operating room after Christina drops that bomb.
Yeah, I'm just like, are we just operating in silence now?
And I imagine that there's
any follow-up questions.
I also just imagine, because there's this rotating staff of people who are doing other things, that there's like three or four of them in the corner going, oh guys, who's Izzy? Like, you know? Anyways, anything else that you have? And I also, was there another topic for this first part of the first episode that you wanted to talk through today? I don't remember.
Yeah, there was, but I feel like, I don't know if it's going to go long. We'll do it anyways. We're going to do Mark's patient, because that is also in the Izzy storyline.
Fuck.
It's fine. Let's just
let's go.
This one will just maybe be a little longer than an hour.
It's good.
So I assume that this is the kind of medical drama that you come to the Grey's Anatomy show for.
Absolutely.
Face transplant. The moment where Alex is holding a full face up like a fucking piece of baloney, I'm like, Carmen loves this shit.
Yeah,
this is the moment that Carmen's like, yes, intestines in the hand.
Yes, it was. And also, like, he picks up the face and he's like, awesome.
Awesome.
Like, just teenage boy transport. Like, Alex is transported back to being a teenage boy. This episode and this storyline, I want you all to know, actual tears.
Physical
crying.
Aww,
and I'll tell you this. I'll tell you the scene specifically that we get, that unless you can guess what scene it is.
Please don't call my dear friend ugly.
Yeah, that whole scene.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Fuck. All right, we'll get to it. But spoiler alert, tears. Actual crying.
Wow, that's amazing. Look at you with feelings. Okay.
Well, Marlo ruined me, actually.
I know she did.
Gosh.
In the best way.
Everything makes me emotional now all the time. I'm crying right now.
Oh my God, look at that. So we have Dave Young. He was in, he got burned in an accident like 12 years prior. So he has the scarring from the burn. Well, first of all, it like burned a large amount of his skin and muscle off. And then the scarring is obviously like horrific. It's across half of his face and he has like no mouth basically. So they have dubbed him Blowhole, which is offensive. Not very doctorly.
But pithy.
Swiss cheese for brains? No, that's awkward and long. Everyone's working on it. It's a big deal. This case is obviously a big deal. This is not something that happens all the time. It has happened in the real world. But this does not happen all the time. Mark has been, he says multiple times that he's worked on it for like 3 years trying to find the best candidate and, you know, making sure they've got a matching donor and all this stuff. And so they have a donor, they have Dave. They're going to peel this other guy's face and put it right on top of his. I don't even know where to start. It's like so seared in my brain.
Let's start with just the interns being insensitive as fuck. And clearly it's affecting Izzy.
Yeah. So that's where Izzy's burden from her secret is coming in. Is again, not distracted on the facts of the case, but emotionally invested, which obviously she already is that kind of person. Like that's what has been established time and time again. But the overreaction in front of the patient doesn't make it any better. So,
right.
She keeps hearing the interns. Interns say blowhole and she's like, don't ever talk again. Yeah. Shut up forever. Multiple times. And then when they make the joke in front of the patient, like pre-surgery, She loses her mind. She's like screaming at them. And that's when Mark comes out and like he tells the interns to go away. And then he's like, do you need help? Because what is wrong with you? Like this, your emotions are getting in my way and I can't have this. Like I have been working too hard to make this happen and I don't need your feelings to come in and piss all over it. And she's like, so he tries to kick her off the case. And she's like, no, he needs me there. And she's like, well, Mark says, well, you can be there like before and after for his feelings, but you're not coming into my OR.
He says, go get a fucking enema, Izzy Stevens.
And also worth noting, George sees that. And that's one yes. of the things where George is like, something's going on.
Yeah, it is. You see these over the top emotions. Izzy has no middle ground right now. It's either she's
that's very true,
like very on one end sad, or very on one end intense rage filled. Like she's clearly yeah. going through all of these stages of grief, but there's no acceptance yet, right? Obviously, but yeah, it's tough. And then one of the things that even stays with her that she talks about, I think, with the we go back to the Christina and Izzy scene, is like she's like. Even Alex was saying the blowhole nickname.
Yeah.
And that affects her. I think there's also this overlap with all doctor shows where you have to have a little bit of cynicism and like truly just a vast amount of dark humor to be able to get through the day. And we see it even in the later conversations with Weber and Derek of like, dude, shit sucks. This yeah. all sucks. Rational, sane people really don't go into medicine. There is a certain kind of mentality that you have to be able to survive this. And yeah. Izzy, like, just can't grapple with the fact that Alex, her boyfriend, the person who she says she loves, could even be one who's making these jokes as well. But yeah. she doesn't yell at him. Not about that.
Yeah. And so this... So what happens with the patient is that, you know, he has friends from the interwebs that are going to come and help him post-surgery, but they come early so that, you know, he knows he has a support system, and he gets really mad because he doesn't want them to see the before. He doesn't ever want them to, like, see what, you know, how he says, like, how ugly he is and, like, the monster or whatever. Because he, I guess, is afraid that they won't like stay his friend or whatever, or they'll be shitty. I don't know. And so they come, he gets really mad and he kicks them out. And then that's when Mark says like, well, I can't do this if you don't have them. Like that's part of the deal. So you need to figure your shit out because I want to do this surgery.
I was a little bit curious about that. If any of you listening out there have worked on a surgery that requires or seen a case that requires like a lot of mental back end work. And it's like a truly like this person's life is going to truly change a complete 180. It was interesting that Mark brings up the ethics board. He's like, the ethics board won't let me do this unless you have a support system. Mm-hmm. And it makes sense. We've seen how the wild facial surgery can affect like Ava. Mm-hmm. Ava Rebecca, but yeah, I don't know. I just didn't understand fully how the ethics board would control that. It feels like something where ultimately it boils down to this surgeon and the patient, but
well,
I don't
know.
I'm curious.
Well, it might be something with because it's such a new surgery, they might have to go through like all these hoops because it's not like a common surgery that's been done a lot before.
Oh, yeah. I didn't think about that.
Potentially, like they might just have to, there might be just more red tape about it because it's not, you know, it's not a lung transplant. There's something that gets done all the time, you know, and they're, you know, has they mentioned working with psych on it, you know, and going through all of that. And again, to your point of Ava Rebecca, clearly
needed some
shit
help
is going down. Like, yeah, it couldn't, it can have pretty large ramifications. So yeah, I think, I understand, you know, the idea, obviously I don't understand this, what this man has lived with, but the idea that, you've seen people turn away from you for like your whole life, and you have friends, and you don't want them you don't want to see them treat you the way that other people have treated you. So you are trying to like shield them, but also shield yourself from that potential hurt. So that's where his anger comes in, when he lashes out when they show up early. But the scene with Lexi being like, you know what, they're the ones that came here for you and they didn't turn away. You're the one that turned away. You're not even giving them the opportunity to show you that they can be good people. And obviously Izzy's in the room. This mirrors what she's going through. She's not even giving, you know, her friends the opportunity to not be shitty and not call her Swiss cheese for brains. So that kind of helps her understand a different perspective as well. So, that's the parallel in the episode, obviously.
Yeah. So I want to talk about, unless there's anything else you wanted to say specifically about that, I wanted to talk about the scene where they come back.
I was just going to say he met them on a chat room for people who really love orchids. Orchids are a very unique, flower. They are not the average. First of all, there's a wide variety of them. They take a little bit more care. They're very like, they're very unique. So that obviously reflects in the storyline, but yes, go ahead.
So this scene is the scene that made me physically ill and emotional, with teary eyes that could water an orchid.
Nice.
So they come back, right? And he's clearly ashamed. We've gotten established all this backstory. I must have missed the part of how it happened. So it was a burn out of his control, and then he's going through all of this shit in his life because of this now. First off, the fact that they came back, I was like, ugh, dagger, fucking friends, because they owe him nothing. I'm trying to put my mind into the space of meeting someone in an online chat room back in the mid to late 2000s. Yeah. There's no personal connection. There's no impersonal connection. There is a personal connection, but it's not in person. It's not physical. So they come in.
Right.
And he kind of has this moment where like he's turning to them, calling himself ugly. And the older woman says, do not call my friend ugly.
Yeah.
And they start to kind of go through these scars, and they're likening it to different breeds or different species of orchids. And that's when I start getting emotional. I'm like, oh my gosh, they're easing his mind by seeing the beauty in what he's gone through.
Yeah.
And they're bringing
it back to the thing that connects them all.
Yes. And then when she leans over and she goes to kiss him on like his cheek or his forehead, like on the side, and he kind of like half turns away and she still leans in, and it's like, gosh, it is just so, it's just such a wild scene and great acting and great backstory. And they don't like force, nothing in this episode, they're forcing down your throat to feel bad for this person. It's all very nuanced. He has kind of like Seth Green did. He has kind of like this jovial attitude that recognizes like, I'm in front of doctors, they're doing their job, like I'm going to joke around a little bit, like it's fine. But deep down, clearly I have this intense, deep-seated resentment to myself and feelings of those ugliness, right? So to see it all come out and that be the end of it, and then we get that scene, you know, coming out after that, where we'll get to that in just a second. But like, they're with him post surgery, and they're like, "My friend has earned this. Let him see himself, his new life, and we're here together." But it's sad. He likens himself to a dead, dying, terrible orchid that is just shitty and ugly, and people wouldn't know and understand what it's been through and what's shaped it. And right off the bat, when she said, "Don't call my friend ugly," fuck you, Shonda. Fuck you, writers. Fuck you all for an incredible, incredible journey that you've put us on.
Yeah. it's a very good storyline. And it does have like the medical impact of being a huge deal, but also like the emotional impact. Also, when she leans in to give him a little kiss on the forehead, like he says he doesn't have family. This accident happened to him like 12 years ago. So the idea that he's had basically any physical contact with someone other than a doctor is probably like none.
Yeah.
So this is the first like moment that he's had that in 12 years, which is also heartbreaking. But yeah, it's a very good storyline. I don't know why that one line, "Please don't call my dear friend ugly," has like stuck with me for so long. And that woman is just like a sweet, sweet little angel lady. And just really like, it's like very motherly to him. And she's like,
yeah,
we are here because we're your friend. This is, we know you. It doesn't matter what you look like because we know you and we care right. for you.
Yeah.
We flew across the country to be here to help you yeah. with the surgery.
Which still is so fucking wild to me.
Yeah.
And he does obviously go through, it's understandable, but he has this dick moment where he's like, "You're strangers to me. Get the fuck away from me." And we're yeah. like, "You're friends. You have clearly had relationship with each other over the internet for how many years now yeah. at this point?" So, yeah, goodness, fuck, this episode is just so good. And then that end scene where Mark's like, "Don't speak, but also let me go ahead and take this wrap off your face because you deserve to see it."
Yeah. I mean, he says, then, he's like, "This isn't what it's going to look like. It's still swollen and red, but like, yeah, you can see it."
Yeah.
And the guy, like, the emotion that when he's like, he has a face again.
Yeah.
Like, ugh.
So he, nice. Putting yourself in the mental mindset of someone who's gone through that, like, you don't even feel like a person anymore. And yeah. to have people talk about the soul, like, fuck, dude, the face, so much emotion, so much character, yeah. so much of a person is in their face.
Well, and you think now, like, a lot of the resources we have now didn't exist in 2009.
Right.
So like now it would be so easy to completely isolate yourself and like literally never leave your home because you have like Instacart, DoorDash, all that stuff. In that time, you didn't have that. So he was still going to have to go out and get all of his stuff. So he's going to have these reactions from people. And yeah. so it's sad. Also wanted to talk about in the surgery where Hunt and Alex are like getting the donor face, and Alex is like, "Oh, can you imagine, like, you know, you're walking down the street and you see like your dead brother's face on somebody else's body?" And Hunt and Weber are like, "Well, not really, because, you know, the underlying bone structure is different." And Hunt is like, "Also, it's not just a face. Like, there's so much more that makes a person look a way that they look, you know, their yeah. eyes, their demeanor, their style. Like, the donor's family wouldn't recognize this face."
Yeah. Like,
that's interesting. It's an interesting point.
Yeah.
But
yeah. It's also worth noting that in between all of those scenes, you get like a couple of sweet moments with Lexi and Mark.
Yes.
And, but the interns are just like,
are being ruthless. Assholes.
It's a shitty episode for the they're fucking being interns.
Assholes about the patient. They're being assholes about Lexi and Mark. And they're not being secretive about either of those things.
None.
They're I like, will let's say, just be blatant about our shittiness.
Well, also to each other. Like, they're just yeah. fucking infighting, you know? But I will say, up until this point, I have not felt like there was any favoritism with Mark and Lexi. Mm-hmm. I did feel like maybe putting the face on is something that a first year intern maybe shouldn't have gotten to do.
Also, when he kicked Izzy off of the surgery, he didn't replace her with another resident.
Yeah. It was just Lexi.
Here's the thing with Mark. Anything he does is going to feel like favoritism because he hates interns. So, like, right. yes, he's giving her the opportunity to earn it by, like, asking her questions. And, yes, she's getting the questions right. And she's doing a good job. She knows her shit.
She's like, killing it. She's killing it.
He wouldn't, like, ask any of the other intern the question. So that's no. the issue. Like, But like, yeah, they're just blatantly like side eyeing, and in the surgery, they're like in the gallery, like, ooh, oh
right,
like fucking toddlers,
yeah,
assholes. And so yeah, there is, you know, Lexi says that they are in a hostile environment, but they, it doesn't, like, the interns think that he's taking advantage of her and she's using him to get ahead, but it doesn't matter. And like, they'll survive. They can adapt and survive the hostile. So at the end, he like walks over to her and she's like, fuck it, I'm just going to go all in. They're going to talk about me. Let's fucking give them something to talk about. I don't even give a shit anymore.
Yeah. Lays a fat old 10 out of 10 smooch.
Also,
right,
she
on
does
him.
That. And he's like, Dr. Gray, like, what's happening? Do I address you? What are we doing? This was not discussed previously.
Yeah. Dr. Gray, you naughty, naughty girl. What do we do from here now?
But yeah, like, the interns are being like, oh, she probably quizzed him in bed last night. Oh, she gets to go on blowhole because she gave Sloan a blowjob. Shut
Maybe. Up. Maybe. But like, she's also fucking smart as shit.
Yeah. She also is good at this. And you guys are pieces of garbage.
Yeah, like literally just fucking around. We'll talk about that in the next episode. But I also wanted to end with this because this had me like thinking through. Were Izzy, not Izzy, were Christina and Burke and Derek and Meredith secretive for longer? Because I feel like the Lexi and Mark thing has been a secret for so long, partly because Mark was keeping it a secret from Derek. Mm-hmm. But did we have to resign ourselves to so much secrecy, or was there, am I remembering that wrong?
I think
I'm
Christina
having a hard time
and Burke
thinking
were a
through.
Secret for a long time. Meredith and Derek, more people knew for sure. But I think the interns knew, but, and then Bailey found out, and Bailey was like mad about it, and so she was being mean. And then Bailey was also mad about the Christina and Burke thing with the, when she erased her from the board. I don't know, it was like a lot. But Burke went to the chief and was like, we're together, whatever. Christina didn't want him to,
right?
And the whole Derek and Meredith thing was like, I think it
trickled
out a little bit more. It wasn't really like a secret because like the interns knew about it, and then like Weber figured it out. But with, obviously, like with Mark and Lexi, everyone knows because Derek and Mark had a fucking fist fight about it in the hospital.
Right.
So, yeah, I Goodness. Think Christina and Burke had a more solid secret for a while.
That's what I was trying to think of.
Did we have anything else to say on these storylines before we break it up for the next episode?
No. I think this is a good ending point. And Kelsey, What are we going to do next episode to kick off? What should we do?
We're going to start with everybody's favorite segment.